Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 327 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyrant, your host once again. And today my guest is AJ Grossman. AJ is the owner of a law firm in Orlando, Florida that specializes and focuses exclusively on the area of family law. And we trace his journey from law school to getting an LLM in dispute resolution to opening a practice with his wife, which presents its own challenges, to going back into big law and then coming back out of big law to open up his current iteration of family law called Leapfrog Divorce, which I think is a very cool name and something different for the family law world. And he's got some great observations about all that transition from one step to another. So, without any further delay, here is AJ Grossman. AJ Grossman, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Neil, thank you so much. I feel so blessed to be able to spend some time with you today.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you with us today. AJ, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, I am a divorce lawyer in Orlando, Florida. That's 100% focus of my practice. That's all I've ever done. I've been doing that for, I guess, about 12 years now. And prior to that, I was in information technology work, working with networks and computers and training people on computers for about 12 or 13 years. And law school brought me from Northern California out to Central Florida. And so I've been here ever since and met my current wife in law school. And after we graduated from law school, we kind of looked at each other and said, okay, so what do we do now? We're graduating with thousands and thousands of other lawyers. What are we going to do to distinguish ourselves? And so, make a long story short, we ended up going out to the Strauss Institute out at Pepperdine University in Malibu, California, to get what's called our Master of Laws degree in dispute resolution. So we were out there full time for about a year, drove back across the country to Florida, studied and took the bar exam, passed, and then opened up our practice.
Well, it's kind of a similar story here. I spent a couple of decades in the information technology space. In fact, my undergraduate degree is in information systems management.
Oh,
so
cool.
kind of a similar approach there. So the Strauss Institute, when you got this degree in dispute resolution, is that kind of like a LLM? Is it, add on to the law degree?
Exactly. Yeah, it's a postdoctorate degree. It is an LLM. And it's interesting, most people, when they see the LLM after my name, they assume it's in tax.
Tax, right.
Yeah, right. But no, it's actually in dispute resolution.
But it comes in handy in the family law practice.
Absolutely.
For sure. So when you were in law school, did you know that's always what you wanted to do? It was family law or litigation in general? Or
no, absolutely not. As a matter of fact, it was the opposite. So both my parents went to law school and passed the California bar, my mom first and then my dad. My dad never practiced, but my mom did practice in Silicon Valley for many years. She went to law school in the early 70s. And one of the areas she practiced was family law. She did criminal appellate work as well and estate planning, wills and trusts. Mm-hmm. And I remember growing up hearing her complain about her family law clients. Oh, they're never satisfied. Oh, they never pay their bills. They call me on weekends and tell me that their spouse is throwing their clothes out the front door. What am I supposed to do? And so growing up hearing all those negative messages about family law. I remember telling my mentor professor, it was the very first day we were going around the room introducing ourselves and talking about what kind of law we wanted to practice. And I said, I don't know what kind of law I want to practice, but I know what I don't want to practice, and that's family law. And she said, well, I'm the family law professor here at the school, so maybe we can change your mind after 3 years. And that's exactly what happened. I ended up working in the family law clinic there at the school, helping people from a lower socioeconomic status get divorced and help them with other issues. And I really found that that was a good niche for me. I felt very well positioned to be able to work with people and empathize with their situations and help them feel that their voice mattered, that they were important. And I showed them how I could help them and make their life better at the end of the day. And that's ultimately what I was looking for, was that inner fulfillment that I'm doing good work.
Yeah, you know, I think as a former family law attorney myself, family law, one of those things I think that gets a bad rap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look, sometimes justifiably so, but I think largely unjustified. Because I think family lawyers come in a couple of different flavors. There's people like yourself who recognize that this is what they want to do and then get value out of it. And yeah, there's some drama involved, but that's what they like to navigate around and help clients with and sort out and make their clients, as you said, their lives better at the end of the day. There's others then who try their hand at family law, don't like what all goes with it, and move on to other things. And I find they frequently then badmouth family law.
Yes.
And so, it, you know, you've got the negative feelings of the public, because hell, who wants to get divorced or wants to, you know, have a custody battle, or
right?
Nobody wants that. And so they transfer that distaste and anger sometimes to the attorneys and to the profession itself. And then you couple that with attorneys who found it wasn't their cup of tea, and they pile on. But
right.
but I think you're a perfect example of somebody who found that niche. And the best family law attorneys that I know are the ones that embrace it, that look at it as helping people sort their lives out.
I agree. And the longer I have practiced 100% family law, the more solidified I become in my decision, and the more I get reinforcement that I really am positioned in the right place. And I remember being in law school, and one of my professors found out that I had a business administration undergraduate degree with a concentration in marketing, and I really had a head for business, and I was unusual or different from my other classmates in that I was good at math, I was good with numbers and statistics, Yes, right. A little older. And she said, you would be a really good business or corporate attorney, maybe in-house counsel. Ugh. And I remember thinking about that. And now that I reflect on it, I think, oh, that, gosh, that would have been the worst move for me, because I really enjoy working with what a lot of us call really good people at one of the worst times in their lives. And being able to help people solve those problems, to me, from my perception, I think I get more out of that than I ever would have helping a corporate entity that doesn't have any feelings, you know, maybe avoid a lawsuit.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I liked about family law, and I think this is the thing that good attorneys in that space gravitate to, is the fact that, you know, everybody has a different story. Everybody has a different set of circumstances. Now, there's obviously some similarities and some common, you know, themes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people are different. People's lives are unique, and their situations are, you know, totally unrelated to anybody else's. And, you know, at least in terms of what to talk about as a cocktail party, you can't do better than family law, because everybody, you can tell a story anonymously, of course, protecting your clients, and everybody at that party knows somebody who's been through something similar.
Right. Right. So true. Yeah. You know, it used to be that, you know, one in two marriages were going to end in divorce. And the statistics today are a little bit less, but now we have more statistics about second marriages and third marriages and how often those fail. But you're absolutely right. The themes that run through marriages and divorce are rather common, but you said it perfectly. Every person, every individual truly is unique because none of us have had the exact same set of parents, the same upbringing, the same educational experience, the same traumas or challenges. We all wear glasses through which we perceive the world in our own way, and our glasses are all different, and our prescription for those lenses are based upon all of our experiences, and nobody is exactly the same.
Right. Right. And I was always continually amazed at how unique the relationships within a marriage frequently are. You know, you have,
oh yes,
you know, you have, you know, some of the kind of traditional, I'm going to say 50s, 60s viewpoint of who does what and what the roles are and what have you. And then you have a more enlightened, in my opinion, or more balanced, views and then it swings all the way to the other extreme where the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing in a marriage. And when it comes to separating that marriage or separating that relationship, it can be challenging because one doesn't know what the other one has been or is doing. So it runs the whole gamut.
It sure does, not to mention cultural diversity.
Well, yeah.
That adds a whole nother level of complexity.
Sure it does these days, doesn't it?
Yes.
So you met your wife in law school. You guys go and you get this LLM together. Did you always anticipate practicing together, or how did you manage that dynamic?
Yeah, that's a great question. I love that question. So no, we did not anticipate that we would right out of the gate open up our own practice. Both of us were really interested in intellectual property, and you know, Orlando really isn't a hub for intellectual property activity. Mm. And so we kind of looked at each other and said, okay, we've sent out a bunch of resumes. We've made contacts. We've networked. Nothing's really happening. You know, if we do open up our own practice, what do we want to do? We said, well, what do we know how to do? We both know how to do family law because we work together in the clinic. And so that's what we did. And my wife had some experience running her own business before. I had some experience running my own business before, but neither one of us had experience running a law practice together. And so, you know, we're entrepreneurs at heart, and we just figured it out and made it happen. And that working dynamic was wonderful, with some exceptions. So the wonderful part was getting to spend so much time together, which we did in law school as well. So it was a very familiar environment and transition. And we would bounce thoughts and ideas off of each other. And my wife was really good at getting in the weeds and the details. I was more a big picture thinker. And so we worked really well together, especially in consultations. We were good at being the good cop and bad cop. And we would go out and we would do public speaking and presentations and networking together, and we were a really great team. The downside to that dynamic was that I wasn't as interested in being in the weeds and, you know, dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's when it came to the administrative side of running a practice. And that frustrated her. And so I take responsibility for my contribution to that. And then the other downside was we found ourselves coming home at the end of the day and talking about the cases. And we felt that that was starting to interfere or inject some negativity into our personal relationship. And we didn't like that. So one of the first things we decided to do was, okay, end of the day, we leave. We're not talking about any clients and no cases at all. And that helped. And then after about four and a half years, my wife waved the proverbial white flag and said, I'm done practicing family law. I don't think I want to be a lawyer anymore. I'd like to go do something different. And so I said, great, I support you. I'm not sure I want to run this just by myself since we have a history here together. I think maybe we should close it down and I'll go join somebody else. So that's what happened. So I worked in some other law firms for a number of years. Now I'm back to running my own practice with Leapfrog Divorce.
So I will tell you, as somebody who's still on their original starter wife going on close to 40 years.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. There is, you know, there's a lot to be said for spending a lot of time together throughout the day and into the evening. On the other hand, there's a lot not to like about spending a lot of time together throughout the day and into the evening. And so I can see, you know, to me, that's really the dynamic that has to be managed. And I applaud you for recognizing that and saying, all right, the solution here, at least in the interim, is when we walk out the door and turn off the lights, that's it.
Yep.
We can talk about anything. You want to talk about Netflix or
yep,
or the weather or the, you know, that's fine. But practice is off limit.
Yep.
If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you in part by the net profit CFO, Ryan Kimler. If that name sounds familiar, you might remember him as being a guest on episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, where we talked about his new company and how they can help you drive profit to your bottom line. I was so enamored by what Ryan had to say that I actually became a client. I called him up and said, I'm ready to take advantage of your expertise. And that's exactly what happened. So I'm now a very happy customer or client of the Net Profit CFO. But I'm also very pleased to welcome them as a sponsor to the show. So do you want to enjoy higher net profits without working longer or harder? As you learned on that previous episode, with just 9 simple numbers, Ryan will help you drive more profit to your bottom line, and he won't confuse you with all the details. If you want to increase your net profit, but don't like getting deep into the numbers, I highly recommend that you connect with Ryan. You can do that by going to netprofitcfo.com and download the Financial Clarity Dashboard. It's a great tool for getting the big picture of your financials. So, tell us a little bit about what you learned or what you kind of came to recognize between the first iteration of your solo / small firm practice and now your current iteration. Were there lessons from the first you carried over into the second, or was there some additional views or revelations that you brought from your time in larger firms in between that contributed to your current iteration of your practice?
Oh, what a wonderful question, Neil. That's fantastic. Yes, gosh, there is so much. So I remember after winding down the first attempt at a solo practice, I remember saying, if I ever do this again, I'm going to focus more on marketing. I'm going to have a dedicated marketing budget, and it's going to be substantial because I think that's where we could have improved with our first attempt. While our marketing was good and it was very targeted, we had a very specific niche, and that was if you want to destroy your family and rip your spouse apart, go see somebody else.
Yep.
But if you want a therapeutic process where you have the opportunity to heal and minimize trauma and harm to your family, then come see us. And that was the same message we put out, whether we were talking, whether we were, you know, doing something on social media or through our website or brochures or whatever it was. The message was very consistent. And at that time, that was back in 2011-ish, at that time, I don't think that the marketplace was maybe quite ready here in Central Florida for that narrowly targeted type of practice. You know, collaborative practice was out there. Some people, you know, believed in mediation, but it seemed like the vast majority of legal consumers looking for a divorce were interested in what I call the traditional force, the highly litigated, high conflict type of divorce. And they were attracted to the attorneys that, you know, had their arms crossed and looked tough and had something about aggressive attorneys. So when we closed that practice, I said, okay, I think a targeted message is good. I think healing and minimizing trauma is still good, but the marketing has to be done better. Mm-hmm. And so when I went to work for some other firms, one of them was well established in downtown Orlando, I got exposed to different ways of running a law practice, from conducting consultations to communicating with clients to how to manage a high complex divorce, whether that be a high conflict, whether that be a high asset divorce with you know, maybe multiple businesses, multiple properties, what have you. I learned a lot. And what I learned about myself was how very different I was from so many of my colleagues. What I learned was that so many people, the people I worked with at that firm, as well as people I had as opposing counsel, really were focused so much on the facts of a situation and applying the law to those facts and getting in front of a judge and having trials. And I thought, well, no, I don't think that's the best for families. And so I always took the approach of being more of a, being more settlement minded, being more of a negotiator, a strong negotiator, believing heavily in mediation. Hey, if it didn't work once, let's try it a second time, or let's try it a third time. Let's keep trying to negotiate and use trial as a last resort. Whereas so many of my colleagues were, well, trial is what I love to do. I consider myself a trial attorney, and that's where I'm headed with all my clients. And if it settles, great, but settling cases is not good for business. And I just didn't subscribe to that.
You and me are in the same boat there. I mean, I cut my teeth as doing personal injury work. And 9 out of 10 cases settle through negotiation or mediation or a variety of other non-litigating approaches. Mm-hmm. And I brought that to the family law, practice of family law, because it's just kind of how I was wired. And I'd rather do that than, you know, be in the courtroom where you can't control everything, even though the actor, the theater guy in me liked liked that aspect of the courtroom. You know, I just, it was too much stress and created problems for the client. So I think you're spot on there. There's plenty of people like that who love the courtroom and think litigation first. And if it settles along the way, fine. People like you who say, no, that litigation is the last resort. You know, me personally, I feel that's the better approach for families.
Yeah. I think so. The more I can keep families out of the courtroom, the better the world will be.
Yeah. My other impression of the Orlando area is that driving around there, you guys have a billboard issue.
Yes, we do.
And those billboards are all those high-priced personal injury guys.
Yep.
Or, just as you said, the family law lawyer with their arms crossed will fight for you.
And, right. Yep.
You know, in gladiator armor.
And, yes.
I've seen a couple of those down there. We don't have too many billboards here in Maryland, so that's not a phenomenon we have to deal with.
Okay. Well, that's a good thing.
So a great observation to draw from your transition through your different law firm settings. So I know now from our previous conversation that you positioned yourself a little differently as a family law practitioner. It's not the law offices of A.J. Grossman. You have a distinct brand. Tell us about how you came about deciding on the branding for your law firm and the positioning of your firm within the family law spectrum.
Okay, again, another question I love. All right. So we are inundated with law firms with very similar names. And I felt that when I was ready to start my own practice again, I really wanted to be different. I wanted to be unique. I wanted to stand out like a sore thumb or, you know, whatever other, you know, analogy you want to make. I really wanted to be different. And I thought one of the first things I could do is come up with a name that's significantly different from all of my other competitors, come up with a logo that's significantly different, and really focus on the branding aspect. You know, when I look around at the successful companies in other industries, that's what they do. They come up with a unique, easy to remember name with an identifiable logo, and they have a brand, and that brand stands for something. And so my first goal was to be different with the name, different with the logo. The other thing that ties right into Leapfrog Divorce, that specific name, was when I was at San Jose State University in my business program, I remember studying a concept in marketing called leapfrogging your competitor, where you take something they're doing and you do it better. You do it different, whether that's more cost effectively, higher quality, whatever it is, you do something your competitors do in a different way that results in a better benefit to your customers or your client. And I thought, oh, well, that's perfect, because that's exactly what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to deliver a better divorce experience, better for children, better for the spouses. I'm trying to deliver an experience that focuses a lot more on people as people, rather than just the facts of their situation and applying the law. For example, in my consultations, I ask people, you know, what's keeping you up at night? I never heard anybody else I worked for ask that question. Usually it's something like, so do you own your home or do you rent? Yeah. Do you have a retirement plan? How many cars do you have? And so I take the opposite approach, and I ask these very open-ended life questions. You know, what's most important to you? If you had a movie running through your mind that was showing you a film of your ideal divorce, what does it look like? You know, and those are questions that my colleagues just don't ask. And so the third thing that went into Leapfrog Divorce and the logo was I had taken a sheet of 8.5 by 11 paper, and I brainstormed a whole bunch of names for law firms. And I handed that sheet to my wife and I said, go through this list super fast and tell me which one jumps out to you first. And she said, well, Leapfrog Divorce, it has to be Leapfrog Divorce. So that's that was the third catalyst for choosing that name.
Well, I think branding is so important because, as you said, there's a million family law attorneys out there. One looks just like the other. One's website looks just like the other. One's name just like the other. And look, I'm guilty of the same thing, okay, with my own practice, the Tyra Law Firm. So there's a lot to be said for disconnecting your personal name from the name of the law firm. Mm-hmm. We have another very successful family law firm in the area. I'll give a little shout out to Christy Zlakis, who has been on the program before, Z Family Law here in Rockville. And one of the things that Christy does with her firm from a branding perspective that I think is so important, she has a color. It happens to be purple. Mm-hmm. Everything around that law firm circles around their branding image and their color. That's not to say that everything in the and the joint is purple, but purple's their color and it comes through, you know, when you get something in the mail that's hand addressed in purple ink, you know, it's from Christy.
Yes. Yes. That's wonderful. I love that.
You know, and you know, I just think that's so important to do.
I agree.
So coming from a tech background, tell me a little bit before we wrap this up. What role does tech play in your law firm, and what are some of the things that you can't do without?
Oh, tech is absolutely huge. So as a virtual law firm, I have no physical space. Okay. So everything I do is virtual. Technology is huge. That's how my paralegals and I and my staff stay connected. So we use, you know, Microsoft Teams, very much like Slack, for our instant messaging. And we use, Microsoft Office products. We use electronic signing of documents. Sure. So, you know, my clients never have to come to me for anything. Everything can be reviewed and signed electronically. Zoom is huge. You know, many of our courts and our judges are still doing relatively simple hearings and some evidentiary hearings remotely over Zoom. So that is absolutely, absolutely essential. I've been a firm believer in cloud technology pretty much since it was introduced. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the level of concerns that some of my colleagues have about security. Yeah. And oh gosh, if I've got a physical server in my office, I know where it is. I can see it. I know it's behind a locked door. And I feel better about that than having all my clients' information up in the cloud somewhere. You know, and there are arguments, pros and cons both way, but I really saw the writing on the wall with cloud technology. And so I don't think I have any technology that resides as an installable program just on my computer system. Everything is cloud-based.
Yeah, the listeners have heard my cloud rant before, but just to briefly, you can have your server behind a locked door, but that doesn't prevent a fire from burning down your building or yep. or the cleaning staff from ripping you off.
Yep.
Or somebody from ripping you off. It doesn't have to be cleaning staff. And chances are, I'm going to guess, if you do have that server, you're not encrypting it like you should.
Right.
And you're not having a backup.
Right.
Remote backup like you should. Just that idea that you have a physical server or a physical implementation is not sufficient. And the level of sophistication that these cloud-based services provide, the level of encryption and protection, you just can't buy. And yep. it just works wonders. What do you do for practice management system?
I've been a Clio user for many, many years. That's mm-hmm. what my wife and I started with back in 2011 with our practice. And then when I left that, the other law firms I worked for had no practice management system.
And you could see what the problems were.
Yes, yes. So when I started Leapfrog Divorce, I said, I know what I'm going to use. I'm going back to Clio.
And are you billing through Clio as well?
Yes.
Yeah, terrific. So, all right, listen, Jay, we could spend another 45 minutes here yakking, but I'm going to let you get back to doing what you do best. Tell our audience what's a good way for them to reach out to you and if they want to follow up with anything you've had to offer today.
Oh, fantastic. So the best way to find me is from my website, www.leapfrogdivorce.com. And they can find my phone number there, fill out a contact form, get tons of free information. It's all good.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you again for taking the time to be with us. I wish you all the best. And I love coming down to Florida, and particularly in the Orlando area. My wife went to school there at Jolly Raleigh Collie at Winter Park, otherwise known
yes.
as Rollins College. So we're down there frequently. So next time I'm down, let's grab that cup of coffee or adult beverage.
I would love that.
All right, AJ, thanks so much for being a guest today on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks, Neil. It's been a pleasure.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them. And I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimmler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.